Hello, this is Greg, and I'll be reading the Vermilion County News for Tuesday, August 25th, 2020. And we'll start with the front page of the commercial news. The first story today is entitled Salt Fork Quarantines 29 Students, and this is by Carol Rome. Catlin, 29 Salt Fork Junior High and High School students are remote learning while being quarantined for the next 2 weeks after potentially being exposed to three students who tested positive for COVID-19. We had three positive cases at the junior high and high school, Salt Fork Superintendent Phil Cox said Monday. We had another one today. The fourth student, who tested positive Sunday, did not attend school Monday and is being quarantined. The first day of school in the Salt Forks district was August 20th, with all students following a blended schedule of shortened in-person learning hours, followed by an hour or so of remote learning at home to finish classwork. Salt Fork Junior High and High School students attend 3 hours and 45 minutes of instruction 5 days a week from 8:15 a.m. to 12:20 p.m. Students then go home to complete 1 hour and 15 minutes of remote activities split among their classes. The three students who tested positive for COVID-19 are from the same family. The family was tested Friday, Cox said, declining to say what prompted the family members to be tested. We've been working with the health department and have called anybody who has been in close contact with the three students, he said. Cox said whole classrooms have not been quarantined, but rather 29 individuals known to have been in contact with the three students, whether in the schools, on a school bus, or elsewhere. Not all of the contact or exposure happened at school, he said. Some of it happened outside of school, like at a park. They are to quarantine for a 14-day period, Cox said. Our teachers have been remote teaching, so we moved the quarantine students to remote learning for 2 weeks. After finding out Saturday that three Salt Fork students had tested positive during the first 2 days of school, Cox said he spent hours contacting parents of students who potentially could have been exposed. It was a long Saturday night, he said. I had to call each parent and also let them know how to access remote learning. We provided them with information and will continue to monitor the situation, Cox added. We have a plan to support all of them. Doug Toole, public health administrator at the Vermilion County Health Department, said it was unfortunate that a few students tested positive for COVID-19 just as area children are returning to the classroom. It's a difficult time, and school officials have spent a lot of time on their reopening plans, he said. Families realize the importance of having their children in school, Toole added, but it's a pandemic, and the virus is hard to avoid. Toole praised the Salt Fork officials for their reopening plan that included specific student seating charts and corresponding phone numbers of parents. Because of the seating charts in the classroom and on the bus, and holding kids to their assigned seats, we were able to stop a situation that's a problem from a beginning, from becoming a nightmare, he said. The plan Salt Fork has in place allowed us to contact parents quickly, Toole said. They will need to quarantine for 14 days, he said, of the 29 students who potentially were exposed. If they want to get tested for the family's peace of mind, they can, but they're still going to quarantine for 14 days regardless. Of the 750 Salt Fork students participating in-person learning, Cox said, the vast majority are in school and not quarantined. I have two kids in-person learning, and that's my decision for my family, he said. Overall, it's been a positive environment. Vermilion County Regional Superintendent Aaron Hurd said he hadn't heard from many area superintendents Monday with concerns about whether to open school in light of Salt Fork's situation. We are so fortunate that the area superintendents are a close group, and they are in constant communication through phone calls and messages, he said. The communication was going on all weekend. Hurd added, "All the districts are in close communication with the health department. There's so much that has gone into these reopening plans. All of their plans are living, breathing documents," he said. "They want what's best, safe, and healthy for the students." Our next story, also from the front page, is entitled "Building Up Downtown. Family Does Its Part with Two Businesses." And this story is by Carol Hicks. Hupston. Bob and Emily Brown love Hupston and dream of a thriving downtown to enhance the growth projected on the outskirts of the city. "There are so many amazing things happening in Hupston right now," Emily said. "From the work that the Lorraine Foundation is doing to help revitalize downtown to the economic growth on the outskirts of town, Hupston is making a lot of progress." The Brown family is definitely doing its share to revitalize Hupston's downtown area. Emily said they used to travel all over the area, sometimes more than 200 miles away, to find collectible cards and other sports memorabilia to add to Bob's collection. When sons Nick and Ben grew older, he shared his passion with them. It seemed only natural. The building the couple bought on the corner of Bank and Main Streets would favor sports, especially since Bob is an avid Cubs fan. The couple's first venture downtown, Bricks and Ivy Sports, opened on May 14, 2017, and has thrived, bringing people from miles, sometimes states, away to meet the sports figures hosted several times a year at the business. One sports figure, former Cub Dexter Fowler, who was at the time playing for the Cardinals, brought 800 people to the downtown area. Other Cubs who came to Hupston were retired players Mark Grace and Andre Dawson, Mike Montgomery, and Chris Coughlin from the 2016 World Series, and Cardinals Hall of Famer Ozzie Smith. Their next great adventure in downtown, thriving even through the pandemic, was the 112 Wine and Coffee Shop at 112 East Main Street, across the street and half a block down from Bricks and Ivy. "I've spent a lot of time researching how to revitalize a downtown area," Emily said. "The number one thing that every downtown needs to bring it back to life is a coffee shop." However, her coffee roaster told her that coffee alone would not be successful, so Emily added wine and food to the menu. "I've always wanted to have a place where the community could come to study, have meetings, get a great cup of coffee," she said. When the buildings came available on East Main Street, the dream began to take on a life of its own. The business opened March 8th and shortly after was closed due to the pandemic. Undaunted, the business, like many others in Hupston that were deemed essential, went to curb service. It was also the pickup place for lunches and homework for the school children until a site was set up at the high school. When Phase 3 of Governor Pritzker's 5-point plan to reopen Illinois gave restaurants the go-ahead for outdoor seating, the 112 Wine and Coffee Shop had a patio and seating ready and open for business in less than a day. It does help when one member of the family partnership has his own construction business. With Phase 4, the businesses could have customers inside again with masks and social distancing. The 112 Wine and Coffee Shop has 14 full and part-time employees. The couple also started the farmers market this year to bring more people downtown, give farmers, artists, and other talented craftspeople a place to sell their items from 5 to 8 p.m. Fridays during the summer months. All proceeds from the registration fees of the market have been donated to the Lorraine Foundation, she said. Bob and Emily Brown were high school sweethearts attending Hupston schools. After graduation, Bob attended Danville Area Community College and completed the Carpenter's Apprenticeship Program. He worked in construction until about 2007, when he started his own construction business, Built to Last Construction, doing commercial and residential construction with his son-in-law, Matt Stock. Emily attended St. Mary of the Woods College to earn a bachelor's degree and later completed master's degrees in both curriculum and administration, before being hired at the Hupston Area School District 11 years ago. She owned and operated Small Wonders Preschool in Hupston. Emily is now the curriculum director for the high school to help align curriculum to ensure that it meets state standards, organizes the school's response intervention program, ensures students have access to online resources to support their learning, writes grants for the school, and organizes professional development for the district. My favorite part of the job is working with teachers and administrators. We have the best teachers and principals, Emily said. They love their students and their work, and their passion is infectious. The staff at Hupston Area are like a second family to me, and I love my job. Their son, Nick, manages Bricks and Ivy full-time and sometimes works at the coffee shop. Daughter Madeline married Matt Stock and just graduated with a master's degree in education. She teaches high school English in the Hupston School District. Son Ben, a junior in high school, also works in the construction business with his dad and at the sports card shop when not attending school. All of our businesses are family-run, Emily said. We would love to see more families take chances on downtown businesses. I can think of several businesses that would be great in the downtown. And our final story from the front page this morning, also another story from Hupston, entitled Motel Purchased by Michigan Man. And this is by Carol Hicks. The downtown motel in Hupston has a new owner. Saba Yokana of Sterling Heights, Michigan, president of Sandoz Electric Services Incorporated, bought the building recently and has plans to bring it back to life. I will do my best to fix it, Yokana said, adding that he plans to replace the roof, gut the building, and possibly put a laundry in the old restaurant part with coin-operated washers and dryers for the use of motel visitors. He said he has already talked to Edwards Contract Concrete and Roofing Incorporated and Built to Last to receive estimates of the repairs that will be needed on the building. Yokana bought the building from a former employee who sent photographs of the motel to him. He said he bought it without looking at it, trusting the photographs and the former owner to be honest with him. The motel first opened approximately in the middle 1950s, built on land that once housed the Clock Tower building, which burned down three times in 1905, 1925, and the last time in 1947. The lot remained vacant until the motel was built. The downtown motel, with its restaurant across the street, was widely used by businessmen, CIPS Ameren workers, truckers, and others who came to Hupston to visit during reunions, funerals, weddings, and during the sweet corn festivals. When the downtown businesses started closing and moving out, business for the motel declined, as did the clientele and the building. It was finally closed permanently about 2014. And now we're going to turn to the obituaries for Tuesday, August 25th, 2020. And the first one today is for John Stanley Morris. John Stanley Morris, 85, of Covington, went to be with his Savior at 9:49 a.m. Sunday, August 23rd, 2020, at home with his family by his side. A celebration of John's life will be held at 1 p.m. on Wednesday, August 26th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Georgetown at 200 East West Street in Georgetown, with Pastor Richard Throckmorton officiating. Visitation will be held 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Wednesday prior to his service at the funeral home, with a Masonic service to be held at 11 o'clock a.m. He will be laid to rest in Georgetown Cemetery. It is kindly requested that face masks be worn and social distancing is practiced by those in attendance of the visitation and or service. Memorial donations may be given in his name to Alzheimer's Association, or Humane Society, or the donor's choice of charity. Gary Waterstraat. Gary Waterstraat of Danville passed away at home on August 21, 2020. A special mention to the organizers of the deck parties, the grass mowers, the ramp builders, and everyone who came over to keep Gary company. You definitely showed him an outpouring of love, family, and friendship. A private burial service will be held at the National Cemetery on August 27, 2020. A celebration of life will follow at the American Legion Post 210, 201 Prospect Place in Danville at 4 o'clock p.m. so that friends may join the family. Social distancing and masks will be available. Tributes to Gary can be made to the charity of your choice or to the Vermilion County Animal Shelter Foundation. Kruger Cone Pape Funeral Home are in charge of arrangements. James Grubb. James Melvin Grubb, 80, of Danville, passed away at 12:11 a.m. at Carl Foundation Hospital. There will be a private graveside service held for Jim, with Pastor Brett Karanovich officiating. Jim will be interred at Sunset Memorial Park. The family would like to give special recognition and thank you to the nurses in the ICU department at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center and Carl Hospitals. Beverly Jean Holmes Schaefer. Beverly was called to be with her Lord and Savior, peacefully passing in her Fort Walton Beach, Florida home on Thursday, August 6th, 2020. No other information is given in her obituary regarding services or memorials. Michelle Colleen Cloyd. Michelle Ann Colleen Cloyd, 48, of Danville, Illinois, went to her heavenly home on August 20th, 2020 at 7:05 p.m. at Carl Foundation Hospital. A memorial service will be held at a later date. Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville, Illinois, has been entrusted with arrangements. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be given to her children. Mary Lou Nichols. Mary Lou Nichols, age 89, formerly of Vetersburg, passed this life on Saturday, August 22, 2020, at 12:40 a.m. at Ben Hur Health and Rehabilitation. Dickerson Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. Funeral service will be at Sunset Memorial Park Cemetery's Mausoleum Chapel on Wednesday, August 26, 2020, at 11 o'clock a.m. Central Standard Time, with Minister Gary Johnson officiating. Interment will follow at Sunset Memorial Park. Due to COVID-19, please practice social distancing and follow other COVID-19 protocols. Memorial contributions may be made to the Sterling Christian Church. Betty L. Kilgore. Betty Kilgore, 82, passed away on Wednesday, August 19, 2020, at her home in Danville, Illinois. A celebration of life service will be held at 2 o'clock p.m. on Wednesday, August 26th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville. Officiating will be Pastor Kylie Garrison. Burial will be in Sunset Memorial Park in Danville. A visitation will be held just prior to the service from 1 o'clock to 2 o'clock p.m. at the funeral home. Janet L. John. Janet L. John, 82, of Danville, passed away on Monday, August 17, 2020. A celebration of Janet's life will take place at 2 p.m. on Monday, August 24, 2020, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville, Illinois, with Pastor Ramey Gordon officiating. Visitation will take place prior to the service from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. at the funeral home. Burial will be at Sunset Memorial Park in Danville. John Barkman. John Mike Barkman, 72, of Danville, passed away peacefully at 4:35 a.m. on Monday, August 24, 2020, at OSF Sacred Heart Emergency Department. A memorial service will be held at a later date. The family would like to thank Colonial Manor Nursing Home for the excellent care they gave Mike these last 4 years. Memorials may be given to the Alzheimer's Association. Rortvedt Funeral Services is handling the arrangements. Opal Blakey. Opal Blakey, 102, of Hubston, died at 12:45 p.m. Sunday, August 23rd, at Watsika Rehab and Healthcare Center. Graveside services will be at 11:30 a.m. Wednesday at Floral Hill Cemetery in Hubston. Pastor Adam Talbert will officiate. Visitation will be from 10 to 11 a.m. Wednesday at Anderson Funeral Home, 427 East Main Street in Hubston. Harold Long. Harold F. Long, 92, of Phythian, passed away at 9:44 a.m. Saturday, August 22nd, at home. Visitation will be from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. Thursday at the Freeze Funeral Home at 302 East Grand Avenue in St. Joseph. Funeral services will immediately follow, also at the funeral home, and Pastor Scott Gould will officiate. Burial will be in Stern Cemetery in Phythian. And that's the end of the obituaries for today. We're going to return to the commercial news now and with some other stories. The next is for it's from Danville, and it's entitled Police Remind Drivers to Remain Sober. And this is a staff report. Danville. As Labor Day and the unofficial end of summer near, the Danville Police Department is partnering with law enforcement throughout the state to stop impaired driving and help save lives. While celebrations marking the last days of summer may look different this year than in times past, the potential remains for an increase in the number of impaired drivers on the roads, said Commander Terry McCord in a Monday press release. Impaired driving kills more than 10,000 people in the United States each year. Please plan ahead for a safe ride home before you leave the house. It truly is a matter of life or death. The high visibility Drive Sober or Get Pulled Over enforcement campaign runs from August 20th through the early morning hours of September 8th. During this period, motorists in the city of Danville can expect to see stepped-up impaired driving patrols and seatbelt enforcement, particularly at night when seatbelt usage rates are at their lowest. Speeders and distracted drivers should also be aware. If you're celebrating this Labor Day, remember to designate a sober driver and don't let friends or family members drive drunk. Even a small amount of alcohol can impair judgment and reaction times, making driving unsafe. The Labor Day Drive Sober or Get Pulled Over campaign is made possible by federal highway safety funds administered by the Illinois Department of Transportation. Next, we have another staff report. This one is entitled DOV to Award Grants to Help Homeless. Danville. The U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs will award 5 grants to community organizations totaling about $1.6 million under the Grant Per Diem or GPD program. The program provides funding to community organizations that provide transitional housing and supportive services for homeless veterans, with the goal of helping homeless veterans achieve residential stability, increase their skill levels and income, and obtain greater self-determination. The GPD program is one component of VA's multifaceted continuum of services and resources to help veterans exit homelessness, Sean Bransky, VA Ileana Healthcare System Director, said in a news release. No veteran should ever have to worry about whether they will have stable housing, and these grants put us one step closer to ensuring all veterans are living in a safe and supportive environment. The award program begins October 1st to support three types of grants to address the unique needs of veterans who are homeless. Per diem-only grants are used to provide transitional housing beds and operate service centers for veterans experiencing homelessness. These grants provide funding in the form of per diem payments to reimburse grantees for the cost of care provided to veterans during the award period. Special need grants provide funding to organizations that incur additional operational costs to help veterans with special needs who are experiencing homelessness, including women, individuals with chronic mental illness, and veterans who care for minor dependents. Transition-in-place grants provide funding to community agencies that place veterans experiencing homelessness in transitional housing while providing them with supportive services. These services are designed to help veterans become more stable and independent, with the ultimate goal of veterans assuming full responsibility for the lease or other housing agreement. When that goal has been achieved, the transitional residence becomes the veteran's permanent residence, and supportive services come to an end. The GPD program has provided veterans who are homeless with community-based transitional housing and supportive services since 1994. The number of veterans who are homeless or experiencing homelessness in the U.S. has declined by 50% since 2010, resulting from the GPD program and other VA efforts. And our last story from the commercial news is entitled, Kankakee will hit 8% positivity rate fail-safe metric. And this is by Jerry Nowicki from Capital News, Illinois. Springfield, another region of the state's COVID-19 mitigation plan, has hit a positivity rate threshold that could spur further economic restrictions, according to the Illinois Department of Public Health website. On August 19th through 21st, Kankakee and Will Counties Region 7 had a rolling COVID-19 positivity rate of 8.0, 8.3, and 8.3% respectively, according to the IDPH website. There was no data available on the site for the following 3 days, however. Per the Restore Illinois Mitigation Plan, 3 state days above 8% in a region warrant further action from the state. Governor J.B. Pritzker has called the metric a fail-safe that would lead to added economic restrictions. In the metro area east last week, which is Region 4 of the plan on the Missouri border, the governor announced mitigation efforts less severe than previous phases of the state's reopening plan. They include requiring bars and restaurants to close at 11 p.m. and limiting seating in those establishments to 6 people per table. Bars are being instructed to seat people only at tables and to remove bar stools to prevent gathering around the bar. Also in the region, public gatherings, meetings, and social events will be limited to 25 guests or 25% of the overall room capacity. All reception halls will be closed and party buses will be shut down. The governor's office had not yet announced any such measures for Region 7 as of Monday afternoon. And lastly, from the Community Briefs section, roadwork announcement. The Indiana Department of Transportation announces a chip and seal preservation project began Monday on US Route 41 at the intersection with Indiana Routes 55 to 63. If driving through the chip seal work zone, drivers should take extra caution, drive slowly, and allow additional space between vehicles to prevent stone chips from damaging windshields or paint. Once the chip seal has cured, crews will sweep away the highway clear of loose stone, apply a fog seal surface coat, and paint pavement markings. And that takes us to the end of our time. It's been great to read for you. My name's Greg, and I hope you have a great Tuesday. Take care.